Lecture 27 of 28. We're almost done. December 5th, 2022. Lecture notes page is 262. The Help the Animal Drive is still going on. I did check. I don't know if I checked this morning or yesterday, but 32% of y'all have participated in the Flash Survey Course Evaluation, adding 0.16 in extra credit to everyone's grade. We could do better than 32% participation. Webbies, fill out the course evaluation either from Flash Survey or as a click off of Canvas. Help everybody out and help me with your evaluation as well. How many people haven't done it yet? Haven't filled it out yet? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay. Help everybody out. Fill out the survey. So here we are on the lecture 27 on December 5th. Mini test 13 will close tomorrow, and Wednesday we'll do lecture 28. That'll determine what will be on the final. For the first time, I think, in a long time, I don't think we get all the way through the material. C'est la vie. And then the mini test 14 review only will cover these last couple lectures, so you have something to review for the final, which then opens the next week. So this is just a restatement of that. Today we're getting to chapter 19, advertising, sales promotion, and public relations. We'll see where we sit on chapter 20. And then the final exam opens next Monday at 8 a.m. and runs through Thursday at 6 p.m. in the usual way of doing things. Mini test 12 closed, whenever it closed, last Tuesday? No, it closed, whenever it closed, last week. And its score was 90%. 13 will close tomorrow. Extra credit number 10, the last of those, will close Wednesday. And those folks have added 2.4 and 2.3% to their final course grade. Good for them. Dates, not all faculty pay attention to what they need to pay attention to. You must give a final exam or an equivalent work project. Not everyone does. And you can't offer it the week before classes. You have to do it during finals week. Technically, for in-person students, it has to be in the prescribed time. So technically, we should all be here at 7:45 Monday morning. Fortunately, we don't have to be. The exam will be open online. You don't have to be here. But if you're saying, I need to take it when it was assigned, it's assigned officially on the final exam schedule, 7:45 on Monday. You can get set for 15 minutes and take it at 8 o'clock on Monday morning if you want to. No. So fortunately, we don't have to do that. But if someone says, did he offer it in the official time, the answer is yes, he did. Also, beyond the official time, out through that Thursday. This should be standard stuff by now. It runs the same way as mini test in 1 and 2. What do we need to know? 50 items, multiple choice, 80 minutes standard time, 160 minutes extended time, 16% of your course grade. Open book, bring a physical book and use it. Open notes, bring physical notes and use them. It's going to cover lecture material from lecture 21 to 28. It's what's covered in mini tests 11 through 13, plus what's in the mini test 14 ungraded review. And you can use the review test to study. I don't know yet exactly what page we end on. That'll be termed on Wednesday. Who has questions for me about the final exam? How it works, what it is, what's going to cover, when it's offered. We know all that. Yay. And I remind you, I'm not screwing around. Don't have a digital device near you. I don't care for the reason. Don't. If you can't abide by that, schedule an in-person exam with me. Don't be looking up and down off the screen, reading a question, looking down. You're not using a book. You're not using notes. I know what you're doing. Don't do that either. Don't. You'll hear from me in a negative way. Again, don't be paranoid. You have to glance at the cat, say something to mom. I'm not concerned about that. I'm concerned about people who are cheating on every test question. Yeah? All right. Questions on that? And I'm happy to sit with you in person and proctor you if you feel that's what you need. Business in the news, we are, part of our college mission deals with sustainability. We're also subscribers, as you know by now, to the UN idea on sustainability goals. So products made with captured greenhouse gas are reaching commercial scale. Straws, bottles, and packaging made with captured greenhouse gases are starting to reach commercial scale, offering a way for businesses making and using everyday products to reduce emissions that contribute to global warming. So this is part of UN sustainability goals and a green business strategy. Big companies are increasingly willing to pay a so-called green premium for products that help to reduce their carbon footprints by seeking alternatives to plastic and other materials made with petroleum, a green business strategy. Origin Materials and New Light Technologies are trying to meet the demand for these green raw materials by bringing factories online that use captured emissions to manufacture materials used to make products including clothes, fashion students, tires, and plastic bottles. The two companies have signed deals with Target, Ford, and other companies hoping to reduce emissions in supply chains and from their use of the use of their goods. So again, innovations in product, in production, supply chain partnerships. New Light expects costs to fall as production scales up and companies' foodware products are already priced competitively with other sustainable options. While there are many sources for emissions, looks like I edited this to say, while there are many sources for emissions, there are many sources for emissions, but they need more infrastructure to capture those emissions that they're using in their production of these new raw materials. So my comment here is something we talked about before. Long production runs tend to drive down costs. That's what this is getting at. We've said it before in marketing in general. And as costs will fall as production scales up for this new business, this new industry. New Light is also in talks with Nike and Sumitomo Chemical Company to use its materials in apparel and the automotive industry, so B2B target markets. New Light's next factory is slated to come online in 2025 in Hannibal, Ohio. Who knows Hannibal? Hannibal? No, it's down sort of central east, I think, in Ohio. It will tap methane from a coal mine through an agreement with CNX Resource Corp. Competitor Origin Materials has a different approach to acquiring captured emissions and plans for its first commercial scale factory to come online next year. It already has, talk about new industries and the introduction to the product life cycle, it already has $9 billion in orders from companies including Primaloft to make bedding and apparel and Ford for automotive parts and expects to be profitable by 2025. That's pretty good. After its second commercial scale plant opens. So a bit about competition in the marketplace and thinking about the early stage of the product life cycle for this new industry, capturing greenhouse gases for commercial sale. So it deals with UN Goal 9 up in the upper left, industry, innovation, and infrastructure, and UN Goal 12, responsible consumption and production. Yay us. All right, picking up with lecture notes 262 and page 512 in the textbook, which should be the start of the chapter on advertising, sales promotion. Oh, you're already up. Advertising, sales promotion, and public relations. Chapter 19, lecture notes page 264. So, what is advertising? Well, you certainly have seen it a lot. Let's get a little technical about it, and the bolded comments here are going to be things that differentiate advertising from other elements in the promotion mix. So advertising is any paid form of non-personal communication about an organization, good, service, or idea by an identified sponsor. So the three critical factors for advertising: paid, non-personal, and identified sponsor. These three things differentiate advertising from other promotional types that we'll talk about. So we obviously have the product advertisements used to promote a product or a service's uses, features, and or benefits. In the early stages of the product life cycle, we have pioneering advertising or informational advertising. People don't buy products they're not aware of. They don't understand that you even exist, what your value or benefits are. So we see it used in the introductory stage of the product life cycle, and in stores, beep, it informs the target market about the existence of a new brand. Hey, here we are. What it is, here we are, and here's what we are, here's what we do, and what it does. Its value to you, which then hopefully causes you to want more of the thing. But without that stage, we're not going very far. I don't know you exist, I don't know what you do, I don't know what your value is, duh. I'm not going to buy you. And where it can be found. So where to buy it. When this was new, here's a pioneering or informational ad about the exciting new Oreo, Your Oreo Creations, being introduced after going through hundreds of thousands of submissions of Oreo's hashtag My Oreo Creation contest. Oreo fans, who likes Oreos? Yo, a lot. The cookie giant has finally decided at that time on three new flavors, pina colada, cherry cola, and kettle corn. Kettle corn Oreos. This teaser ad introduces them to make consumers aware of their existence so they consider going out to buy them somewhere. Oreos does a lot of this sort of new product stuff, so here's introducing Oreo Fudge Rings, a crispy, thin Oreo cookie, ringed, drizzled with white fudge. New Oreo Fudge Rings, also an introductory ad, pioneering ad. Here's one that introduces a, quote, new attribute. I'm being a little funny when I say that. Jill, 41, her smile, age-defying. So your new toothpaste will make you appear younger because it is the age-defying Arm & Hammer toothpaste. I need some of that. So they're introducing a new product with new values, new attributes for you. Competitive advertising or persuasive advertising tries to point out that brand's special features, special advantages, and special benefits relative to the competition. So not just that here and here's our value, we're better than those guys over there. So a subset of competitive advertising is comparison advertising. In that case, the ad shows a brand's strengths relative to another brand on a specific attribute, either directly or indirectly. So for a long time, I really enjoyed, and we may be popping up one of these, the Mac versus PC ads. They were specifically comparing Mac to PC and pointing out how Mac was the better product for you, so you really ought to buy Mac. Coke versus Pepsi battle, they're often doing comparison ads, how one is better than the other. So comparison advertising, a subset of competitive advertising. Here's the classic ad, which you may recall.
Hello, I'm a Mac, and I'm a PC. You know, we use a lot of the same kinds of programs.
Yeah, like Microsoft Office.
But we retain a lot of what makes us us.
But you should see what this guy can do with a spreadsheet. It's insane.
Oh, shucks.
Yeah, and he knows that I'm better at life stuff, like music, pictures, movies, stuff like that.
Whoa, what exactly do you mean by better?
By better, I mean making a website or photo book is easy for me, and for you, it's not.
Oh, that kind of better.
Yeah.
I was thinking of the other kind.
What other kind?
So, in a humorous way, making the point that, hey, you ought to be buying a Mac, forget that PC stuff. This is a comparison ad, pointing out how one of these two is better than the other. Kids, yeah, you can buy a soda, something special. Oh, he's buying a Coke. Ah, find another one. It's really like Coke, okay? Wait a second, what's he? Leaves the Coke back on the ground. He said to get to his favorite drink, Pepsi. Pepsi being better than Coke, at least for this target audience. Reminder advertising, another form of product advertising, used to remind customers about an established brand's uses, characteristics, and benefits. You know who I am. You know what I do. You know my value to you. You've liked me, but don't forget to buy me. So it's common in the mature stage of the product life cycle, right? You're already out there in all those distribution points. And all I'm doing is reminding you that I exist. Nothing new, no comparison going on.
This is the Pepsi that your father drank and his father drank before he met your grandmother. This is the Pepsi for this model and his mom. Hi, Cindy. Oh, hi, Brittany. Have you met Uncle Drew? This is the Pepsi that's back from the future and back for one last ride. This is the first Pepsi on the moon.
What?
No.
Fine. This is the Pepsi for moonwalkers. This is the Pepsi for every generation.
Didn't learn a thing new. Didn't compare it to the other brand. We're just saying, hey, we're there. We've been there for a long time. Remember, we're here. Remember Pepsi. Reinforcement advertising. We talked a long time ago when we looked at the model of consumer behavior about the end result of the purchase process, and we know that no matter what you buy, there's some level of doubt about what you buy. Sometimes it's minor, sometimes it's bigger. So consumers often have doubts about their purchases, or what we call post-purchase dissonance. Reinforcement advertising is meant to deal with that. So this advertising assures the consumer that they've made the right choice, tells them how to get the most satisfaction from it. I think I probably mentioned previously a true comment that as my wife and daughter would go to the Coach store, where you shouldn't have too many doubts about the product quality, they would get a little handwritten note congratulating them on their good taste for buying this wonderful product, whether it was a purse or whatever. In case they had any doubts about how much they spent and what they got, you've made the right choice, right? How to use it. So sometimes we see silly things like, congratulations on your new iron. Do not iron clothes while on your body, which people apparently did. And this was trying to tell them, you'll be dissatisfied if you do that. Don't do that. Institutional advertisements. Institutional advertising focuses on promoting the benefits, the ideas, or philosophies of the business or an entire industry. And they're trying to enhance their reputation, or in some cases repair their reputation, rather than selling a product or a service. Since institutional advertising attempts to build a positive image, it's closely related to public relations. Sometimes we see institutional advertising being called corporate advertising, but either way, we're focusing on benefits, ideas, or philosophies. So we have advocacy, institutional advertising, pioneering institutional advertising, competitive institutional advertising, and reminder, institutional advertising. PETA is out there. They're not selling a product. They're sort of dealing with a philosophy. We all know PETA, right? People eating tasty animals. That's not what it stands for. People for the ethical treatment of animals. So we often see institutional ads on their ideas, not a selling on a product.
Beer. And they're steering you wrong. Listen now.
I'm a cow.
Cause I don't have long. Our
sweet backsides
would like to stay together. We don't want to be your leather.
Won't you show me some love? Don't you make me kid gloves. Or a jacket or a shoe. Cause my skin ain't for you. Do I make myself clear? Keep your hands off my rear.
So we're not selling you a product, if anything, we're asking you not to buy a particular kind of product, yeah? Here's a TikTok ad in the digital age from PETA.
What's a scam that's become so normalized that we don't even realize it's a scam anymore?
You know what they tell you as a kid, that you need to drink cow's milk to have good calcium? Myth. Not only is cow's milk not meant for human consumption, many people, including children, actually struggle to digest it and develop lactose intolerance. And besides humans, no species drinks milk beyond infancy or drinks the milk of another species. Oh, and by the way, by consuming cow's milk, you support cruelty to cows and help destroy the environment. Try vegan milk. It's better. In every way. Trust us.
So... there's PETA out there in the digital age with messages as well. So PETA's mission statement, animals are not ours to experiment on, eat, wear, use for entertainment, or abuse in any other way. There's their website, and they're out there with advocacy advertising. Here we are asking that big corporations do their part to end plastic pollution, consistent with our marketing in the news or business in the news today. Demand that big corporations do their part to end plastic pollution. Take action. Tell Starbucks, don't trash our planet. Take action. A Greenpeace advocacy ad. This is one on energy from We. To our leaders, free us from our addiction to oil. Free us from $4 a gallon gas, $4.39 a dollar gas, $4.61 a dollar gas. Save our economy. Save us from this climate crisis. Give us truly clean energy. Use the wind. Use the sun. We demand that we use them. We demand that we repower America. There is a solution. There's no time to waste. We, the American people, demand a better future. Give us 100% clean energy within 10 years. That might have been an ad from 10 years ago. I don't think we're there yet. But the point is, they're not selling a product. They're doing a philosophy. They're doing an idea. As we think about developing our advertising program, whatever it is our intent is, we have to think about our target audience. After all, we constantly say that consumers are at the center of what we do, the center of the four P's of the marketing mix. So we have to identify our target audience. To communicate effectively, we have to have overlapping fields of experience with the target audience. You remember that from our Chinese calligraphy example? You have to have the same background as I do, so we have to be sure that we understand the audience. We have to know who they are, what their values are, what their attitudes are, what their beliefs are, what their lifestyles are, in order to get our ad to be effective. So understanding the consumer is the key to developing a successful ad program. Otherwise, you're talking over their head, you're talking under them, you're talking against their values, none of which is going to cause you to have the results that you want. There are two different schools of thought about what your objectives might be. We actually alluded to these last lecture. One is the sales school. And the sales school of advertising says, look, the objective of advertising is to sell products or services, so the objective is to prompt direct action. The communication school is a little broader. They say, hey, look, there are other objectives for advertising, including enhancing the image or the reputation of a product or an organization. General advertising objectives from the communication school are things like, hey, look us up, check us out, look at our website, investigate our product. Think about the benefits that this thing will offer given your needs. Remember we made you happy before, the last time that you tried us? Try us again. Or to change attitudes, or to reinforce attitudes. So when we talked about direct marketing, and if you remember the name Ogilvy last time, he is clearly the sales school. Direct action, buy the thing now, do it. The communication school has broader objectives. I'm indifferent as to what approach you take, right? Whatever works given your industry, given your company, given your consumers, fine with me. These are the same approaches as we mentioned when we talked last time about an integrated marketing communication. How are you going to set your budget? You can do it as a percentage of sales. So when sales are up, your ad budget goes up. When sales are down, your ad budget goes down. I still question that wisdom, but companies do it. Competitive parity budgeting, and you can match competitors, or if you're not that big, you can have the same share of advertising budget as your market share. Say you are 10% as big as them, so you have 10% the ad budget they do. All you can afford budgeting, we talked about entrepreneurs often have to do that. After they cover everything else, whatever's left, they're going to budget. Or the objective and task budgeting. What's our goal? What would it take to get there? Let's plan out a logical, rational approach to budget. Designing the advertisement. Obviously, the ad has to get the target audience attention. If they don't pay attention, you're not going to, or it doesn't reach them, you're not going to stand any chance of reaching any of your objectives. So we might want to inform the consumers, persuade the consumers. Whatever you are sending out there has to be consistent with your brand image and your objectives and your target audience. You would say, well, yeah, but the reason we're bringing it up is some companies, it's no. They're not consistent. The messages are confused or mixed. People don't understand what's going on. Some types of appeals, fear appeal. If you don't do this, or do this, whichever way it is, you're going to be in big trouble. Sex appeal, we know sex sells, duh. Humor, I like humor a lot. I use it in the ads examples. Humor often gets attention. There are lots of other types, but let's take a peek at some of these.
Recognize that sound? That's your heart racing when law enforcement catches you for drunk driving. Truth is, it's happening more and more these days. Cops are cracking down all across America. If you drive drunk, it's more likely than ever you will get caught and you will be arrested. So don't take any chances. If you're drunk, do not get behind the wheel. And maybe you could avoid feeling like this. Drunk driving, over the limit, under arrest. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Transportation.
So obviously that's intended to get a little fear in your mind. We were talking earlier, and someone in the class said they bought Liquid Death, that water stuff. And they said when they first bought it at the convenience store, they were being carded because the clerk didn't realize it was water. And then he would drink it in the car. And I said, what if a cop sees you drinking that in the car? Does he pull you over because he thinks you're drinking alcohol? So far, not. I also used to say, it would be more effective if they had sirens playing. Apparently that's illegal. You can't do that in a radio ad. I didn't know that. All right, so this is a fear appeal. This is a bit of a sex appeal with Alicia Silverstone. And see if you think it's too sexy for you. Well, apparently I blocked it. You can't see it. What? All right. This is for PETA.
I'm Alicia Silverstone, and I'm a vegetarian. There's nothing in the world that's changed me as much as this. I feel so much better and have so much more energy. It's so amazing.
GoVegan.com. So, quick poll here. How many people found that to be sexy? No one thought it was sexy? All right. One guy thought it's sexy. You and I think it's a little sexy. How many people found it offensive? That shouldn't be shown on TV. How many people watched the ad? Well, no one watched the ad. That's why no one has a reaction. So, all right. So, believe it or not, Alicia Silverstone was found to be too hot for TV, at least in Houston. The actress shed her clothes for this PETA ad championing vegetarianism, set to debut in Texas, but Comcast pulled the 30-second spots from the airwaves. PETA claims that Houston was chosen because it often ranks high on the list of cities with the worst eating habits. So why did Comcast pull the commercial? A spokesman for the cable company said there was too much nudity in the ad as a decision to cancel the campaign, though the clips had already been paid for. You never know how things are going to play out when it comes to regulatory, legal, and political factors, eh? Cheetos uses a humorous appeal here, and I'm not advocating. Where's my ad?
You know, other people are trying to do their laundry, too.
Felicia, those are her whites in the dryer.
So, please do not put Cheetos in the whites of other people's dryers, but it's a bit of humorous rebel appeal for folks to think about Cheetos and the cheetah. So now we have to create the actual message. We have to think about, duh, the target audience. Is your target audience not going to like nudity, not going to like the humor of putting Cheetos into a dryer? The type of media to use, what are the media habits of your target audience? TV, radio, websites, streaming. The product factors themselves, how much do you need of sound, of visual, of lengthy explanation to get your product idea across? So how complex is your product? How much do the consumers know what it is? They don't need a lot of explanation. What are your overall promotion and advertising objectives that should drive the actual message to? Are you trying to inform people, persuade people, remind people? All should be taken into consideration. The appeal is part of the message structure. That's the underlying idea that captures the attention of a message receiver. What's going to grab those people's attention? An emotional appeal. Aw, that's so sweet. A fear appeal. A humorous appeal. A sex appeal. What's the value proposition? Why should the consumer be interested in the product? What's the value to them? Often we have an emphasis on the benefits obtained, age-defying toothpaste. So let's think about some advertising mediums to reach our consumer. Television, you've heard of that. Obviously, if your product needs sight and sound and motion, that might be a good way to go. It appeals to multiple senses. It offers mass audience coverage. And it has the potential of grabbing viewers' attention, right? So it does happen. Super Bowl ads grab people's attention. But it's hard to target a narrow audience. So there's wasted coverage. You reach your target audience and a whole bunch of other people. The impressions are fleeting. They come and go. It has a short life, so again, it's viewed, it's gone, and the overall cost is high. The cost per person reached may be low, but there are a lot of people reached, so the overall cost and production cost can be quite high. Radio. Radio is still widely used today. There's still over 25 million radios sold each year. It's got a low cost per unit of time, and for that matter, per production. Geographic flexibility, so you know, we have radio stations that focus on Canton or Akron or Cleveland or Youngstown. And you can get audience selectivity within the station format. country, classical, NPR, rock, alternative. So that all works. Burke Marketing would be happy to help you develop a radio ad that would get pretty good action for you. Let's hear what they have to say.
Hi, Bruce Barker here for Burke Marketing. In the next couple of minutes, I'm going to tell you how radio advertising can get you more qualified business leads, no matter how competitive your market is, and how you can start a national radio campaign for as little as $25 a spot. That's right. It doesn't matter if you're in a really big, super competitive market or if you're in a niche market that's less competitive. Either way, I'll show you how you can get higher quality leads faster with radio advertising than with most other forms of advertising. You may have tried other types of lead generation methods in the past that didn't work out, but radio advertising is different. This is direct response advertising. Advertising that puts you and your business in a different league. Advertising that gets you noticed and gets qualified prospects to call you. Think about this for a moment. People wake up to radio. They go to work with radio and go to bed with radio. On a typical weekday, 73% of all consumers listen to radio in their car. So that means your advertising message can become an integral part of your prospect's daily commute, giving you the perfect opportunity to make a compelling impression on them. The bottom line is, radio advertising works in a way that no other form of advertising does. So if you're frustrated with pay-per-click, direct mail, or buying leads that never pan out, that stops today. If you're spending money on other forms of advertising that are less than effective or getting you a low ROI, you can knock that off right now. See, radio advertising isn't about doing any of that. It's much easier, much more effective, and it's a lot faster. And the turnaround time is second to none. We can literally have your ads on the air in as little as 24 hours after our first telephone call. And you can run them nationally or locally. It doesn't matter. And every one of your leads can be tracked through our call tracking system. That way, you'll know exactly what stations are most effective at getting you more qualified leads and which ones aren't. Another reason we make radio advertising work so well is because we know how to write scripts that will appeal to your ideal target audience. Our direct response team writes your script and has it produced and voiced by a professional voiceover artist. You never have to worry about writing a thing because we do it all for you. And I've got a couple more pieces of good news for you. Many people think that advertising on the radio is out of reach, that it's reserved for a handful of big players with big budgets. The truth is, radio is affordable and effective. So even if you're a small entrepreneur, like a lot of our clients, you can still compete with the giant mega companies. In fact, we're placing national campaigns for as low as $25 a spot, putting your business on par with the largest companies in your marketplace. We even have access to remnant media or last-minute unsold inventory that'll save you as much as 60% off the rate card. At Burke Marketing, we do all of the media planning and negotiating for you. We locate and secure the right media for your ad campaign. We do it all for you from start to finish. The bottom line is this. There is a world of opportunities that exist that'll save you time, aggravation, and most importantly, money. Burke Marketing is in the business of creating success stories through qualified lead generation. And the tool that we use to generate leads for you is radio advertising. To get a free marketing analysis to see if radio advertising is right for your business, call us at 866-747-4707. That's 866-747-4707.
So, radio advertising is direct marketing that's guaranteed to get you leads. And what does this ad end on? Hey, call us for this good information. You can see it's also written as a comparative ad compared to other sorts of media sources. We're much better. It shows the value that it would have for you, the various attributes and characteristics and benefits that you would have. So, it's arguably a pretty good example of a pretty good ad that would appeal to somebody looking to advertise their product out there. Disadvantages, of course, is if your product needs to be seen, well, perhaps radio isn't going to work so well for you, right? It has less attention than TV does in general. The rate structure that they refer to the rate card is non-standard, so it's a little hard to navigate the cost. And, of course, the message also has a short life, much like TV. It's there and gone, so it requires a fair amount of repetition to work for your target audience. Magazines, anybody still read a magazine? Okay, three people. So they're still out there. They have high geographic and demographic selectivity, right? So in terms of demographic selectivity, the audience for Vogue is different than the audience for Time. Geographic distribution, they actually have regional editions of magazines, and in some cases, city editions of magazines. So you can buy the New York City edition, the Chicago edition. Has the psychology of attention. When you read a magazine, you're a little more engaged than when you're driving in your car and listening to the radio. You're a little more engaged with the magazine. If it's important to see the details of your product with all of its glorious beauty, it's going to play nicely in terms of a magazine. And you do get pass-along readership, so people do sometimes share magazines among the family members, or you'll see it on the doctor's table in the waiting room. So there's that advantage as well. But it's not going to happen in 24 hours like radio advertising is. It takes a long time to get things going, 6 to 8 weeks before publication, your thing has to be ready. There's some waste circulation. Not all of your magazine goes to your target audience. And there's no guarantee of the position that your ad has in the magazine, unless you pay a premium. So you may find that your ad for liquor is right next to an ad about problems with people and drunk driving. So you don't know where your ad's going to be placed. That could be an issue for you. Newspapers. Who's heard of newspapers? You've heard of them. Okay, they're a thing that old people read. And they're flexible. You can do lots of different things with your ad. They can appear in different places within the newspaper, different days of the week. They're timely, since they're out, a couple times a week. You can get intense coverage of local markets, especially with the local newspapers. So you can have the Stowe Sentry, the Hudson Hub, the Record Courier for this area. It's broadly accepted and used. And for some old people, it's still highly believable because it's the printed word, and they still believe in that stuff. So we got the Cleveland Plain Dealer, the Akron Beacon Journal, the Record Courier, the Stowe Sentry, the Hudson Hub as a way to get our message out. You can actually connect to Akron information businesses and marketing experts through the Beacon Journal and their local IQ, online, in print, and everywhere in between. They've, of course, moved from just being a print newspaper. We've been part of the Akron community since the first issue of the Akron Beacon Journal in 1839, with daily circulation of over 60,000 on the weekdays and 85,000 on Sundays. We can help you reach an engaged local consumer with print advertising or with our digital marketing solutions. Short life span. People don't tend to leave newspapers around for other people to read on their desks. Often it's read quickly, unlike magazines, where usually you have that attention to the articles. Repeating, not much pass-along audience, and obviously declining readership. Yellow pages. How many people still have yellow pages around their parents' house somewhere? They've seen yellow pages sit there. They're still delivered periodically. I actually had somebody one semester, their dad was a small business entrepreneur. He said he gets a lot of his business still today from yellow pages. So it depends on your business. Excellent geographic coverage. Long use period. They sit around for quite a while. And they're always available. You don't have to worry about the website or the internet being up. They're always around. But there are lots of other directories out there, including online things. And it's hard to keep the things up to date. They only come out periodically. The internet. So, obviously has a bunch of advantages. It's interactive, so it's important to have your consumers click, rotate, roll, scroll, view. You can do it on the internet. It's got a low cost per exposure. A lot of people can see it at a reasonable price. You can target your ads in interest sections. So you get your home page, and there's something for men's fashion, for women's fashion, for kids, for toys, for appliances, whatever. So we can target the audience. You can have a lot of information at a click. And obviously, people have positive attitudes about it compared to, say, newspapers. On the other hand, how many times do you see an ad that you just scroll right beyond? You don't even look at the ad. It's gone. So it may not grab your attention. Short message life comes and goes. The reader selects the exposure. It's not like if you are a sports enthusiast that you get your sports magazine and I'm there. Here, the consumer chooses to click on you, not click on you, scroll by you, whatever. Some people see ads on the internet as being intrusive. Those pop-up ads are still around. And it can be affected by download speeds. Your website has to be up. It has to be fast. And sometimes people just leave because you get the little spin, spin, spin. I'm gone. I don't want to wait. How many people have seen a billboard of late somewhere? Okay, they're everywhere. We don't think of them much as a medium for communicating, but of course it's there. The most popular format of outdoor or out of home, OOH, advertising is billboard. There are a range of other options. So billboards can be flexible. They can do different sorts of things compared to some other advertising mediums. You ever watch, these days you skip over it, watch a pod of advertising in real time on television? We hate watching real time TV, but it's got like 5, 6, 7, 8 ads. You're lost in that pod of advertising. Here the billboard stands out by itself. If you put it in the right place, people drive by it, they drive by it, they drive by it, repeat exposure. And compared to other choices, it's relatively inexpensive, so that might work for you. On the other hand, you can only do so much on a billboard. So it's got creative limitations. There are lots of distractions for viewers, like, I don't know, driving. Not in favor of some environments. They see them as pollution. And it says no audience selectivity. That's an exaggeration. Limited audience selectivity. Obviously, if you're seeing something driving down Route 43 towards Kent, people are seeing it coming to Kent as opposed to somewhere else. So there's some selectivity depending on placement. This is too much detail, I think, for our purposes. But you can see that there are other types of out-of-home displays. Billboards, and you can see the types and the numbers. Street furniture on bus shelters and urban street furniture. Digital street furniture signs is another choice. On transit, anybody been through Cleveland Airport recently? Have you seen some big signage for Kent State program? Yeah, I mean, it's there. You guys know it, but how about people coming in from somewhere else? Wow, Kent State, not bad. Buses, rail stations, subway, etc. And place-based out-of-home advertising. Arenas, stadiums, at the cinema, shopping malls. So those are different sorts of ways of getting your message across. Here's some fun stuff. So this is an out-of-home ad for the best, quote, the best plumber advertising ever. You can see they painted a guy on a toilet driving a van as he drives his vehicle around. Get your attention, I think. When iPod originally came out, 2003, these ads, like that big silhouette one, showing somebody using the iPod, got attention. It jumped out at people. Apple has a clever shot on an iPhone billboard campaign, invited customers to send in photos shot on their iPhones. And the standouts were actually turned into billboards that appealed to onlookers. So if you knew about iPhone, you were interested, that was actually done on someone's iPhone. Cool. Gets attention. Here's one for the Copenhagen Zoo, where a boa constrictor is crushing a bus. Here's one that encourages you not to smoke. This is FedEx, quote, always first. So they painted. what is the yellow one? DHL truck on the back of a FedEx truck, so you can see that FedEx is always first. Direct mail. We have a mailing list, and we're going to send some brochure, some document, some invitation directly to our audience. So you have huge audience selectivity. It's your mail list. Flexible. You can do elaborate or simple things. If you can get them to open it, there's no competition from another ad. And it can be personalized. It's not just the name on the front of the envelope, but you can actually put people's names inside the direct mail piece. On the other hand, that's pretty costly to do, and it's hard to grab the consumer's attention. They see it, they throw it out, or hopefully recycle it. So you may get a lot of waste there. Again, I don't think we need to go through all of the details of television, radio, magazines, newspapers, yellow pages, internet, outdoor, and direct mail, but there are advantages and disadvantages to each. I think that's probably from the book, but it's certainly in the lecture notes. Guerrilla marketing, a different way to get your information out, to get your advertising out. a different part of the promotional mix. Guerrilla advertising is unconventional advertising strategy that raises brand awareness among a large audience without interrupting them. It's typically done rather inexpensively. Guerrilla marketing techniques mostly play on the element of surprise. Holy mackerel, what's going on? It sets out to create unconventional campaigns in public places that catch people unexpectedly in the course of their day-to-day routines. The campaign is intended to take consumers by surprise to make a big impression about the product or the brand. And when done well, and it catches people's attention, it can actually create buzz about the product being marketed. So, for example, here's a street guerrilla marketing example. This was a walkway where you often see those yellow lines painted, and they put a McDonald's French fry container on it. Not the most exciting or surprising thing in the world, but still unexpected. Here's McDonald's in Malaysia. They hand-painted fries on a walkway that leads to the locals straight to their flagship restaurant in Malaysia. So the same idea as we saw in New York carried out elsewhere. To celebrate the launch of its newest shirts and underwear, Gold Toe decked out the famous New York City statues within its products. So there's the Wall Street Bull in a nice Gold Toe underwear. Got attention. Here we're using a high traffic space to promote an idea. A poster down here makes you stop. A homeless youth down here makes you walk faster. Why not pay more attention to the homeless? Homer eating a donut, that's going down an escalator, so the donuts kept feeding into Homer. It was for a local donut shop. And the one on the right-hand side is for a local dentist, grabbing attention. This was a tunnel advertisement for the all-you-can-eat rest stop. You're driving into this lady's hungry mouth. Saatchi & Saatchi created an ad for Folgers Coffee on all those steamy manhole covers. So you saw a steaming cup of Folgers Coffee instead of just the manhole cover. So now we're going to think about how we're going to schedule our advertisement. That's not guerrilla ads. This is the other types we considered. First of all, what's your objective? Suppose you want to reach 60% of your target audience during the next 6 months with the message that KSU is listed in the best business schools by the Princeton Review. I believe still a true statement. Well, you would, disperse your ads in various media over the next six-month period. On the other hand, if you're H&R and running an ad on electronic tax filing, when are you going to run that, do you imagine? Yeah. You would think that they probably aren't running it in July to get attention for it. So they're probably running maybe 3 months prior to the deadline. And what's the deadline for most folk? Nobody knows the deadline for taxes. Typically, April 15th-ish, plus or minus a few days. And then you would start it maybe 3 months in advance and build in frequency up until you come to that deadline. You're going to have to file with us. Pizza Hut. Well, people eat pizza all the time, right? So perhaps they would run weekly newspaper ads. Maybe they'd run on local cable TV. Maybe they have inserts, you know, for your Kent Stater magazine or whatever during some special promotion. And the textbook has a bunch of other factors to consider in terms of when you schedule the ad. There are different approaches to doing the scheduling. One approach is a continuous or a steady schedule. Your product is something that people need all the time, so you're going to run your ad the whole year round. The advertisements under this type run at regular and fixed intervals. The main advantage here is reminding the consumers about your products. A good option for products or services that don't depend on seasonality for advertisements. When do you need Tide detergent? All year round. So we're going to run in a continuous or steady schedule. On the other hand, if you have a situation where there's a lot of seasonality to your product, there's a peak period, you're probably going to use flighting or intermittent schedule for your advertising. Advertisements run for a very short period of time, and then there are no ads at all. The ads are in concentrated form. The biggest advantage here is that there's less waste of funds as the ads only run at the peak time when the product demand is high. So I pick on, as my example, cranberry sauce. You just don't see a lot of cranberry sauce ads in May and June. You mostly see them as we're coming up on Thanksgiving. Or you might choose a pulse or burst schedule. This is a combination of both continuous and flighting schedules. Here, we run our ads the whole year round, but heavy ad scheduling, a burst, is run at the peak time, high demand, new product introduction. So we see cars advertised all year round. But as that new model year is coming up, there could be a burst of advertising to get our attention from the new model year. As we think about executing the advertising program that we've developed, I would argue you ought to do a little pretest. And it sure isn't clear to me that even big companies do adequate pretesting, given some of the responses we get. What are the ad's strengths and weaknesses in the minds of your consumer? What impressions do they get from the ad that you have run or going to run? What are the mental and emotional associations triggered by viewing the ad? Do your target audience members get the core message? You remember my example of someone's head inside a microwave oven showing how roomy it was when people were still worried about microwave radiation. Were people getting the right message out of that? I'm not too sure. If an ad program doesn't do what it's intended to do, dear marketer, it's almost always your fault, not the consumer's fault, because you didn't bother to make sure that they're getting the message the way you intended it to be. There are techniques mentioned in the textbook. One technique is for video ads or internet ads is eye tracking, eye movement. So here we're looking at a portion of a video that pops up, and this is the analysis of the typical viewer's eye movements, and it shows the way that the consumer would jump into the advertising. So it pops up, and consumers start at the center, and then the girl attracts most people's attention next, so people look to the left and look at the funny girl with the funny teeth. The actual advertising message is not registered until the third step. And again, this is a moving ad. By the time people see the message, it's gone. The viewer doesn't register the logo and with it the source of the advertisement until the final step, and you probably have not gotten your message across. Sorry, bad ad. So again, the textbook talks about a bunch of other techniques that you can look at. So we can do things with our studies to see, for example, did anybody recall seeing the ad? We'll often do something like, did you watch Stephen Colbert last night? Yeah. Do you remember seeing any ads at all? No. We didn't. We weren't very effective with our ad in that campaign. When you think about toilet paper, what brand comes to mind? You don't spend any time thinking about toilet paper, but if you were, what brand comes to mind? Nobody has a brand of toilet paper they can... Charmin! That's unaided brand recall. And what we typically see among consumers is unaided brand recall typically reflects market share. The number one mention is usually the number one brand out there. Did you see any advertisements on Colbert last night for Kent State University? You didn't say you saw any ads. Maybe if we prompt you, we'll get an answer. If you saw the ad, what were your likes and dislikes about it? How did it influence what you thought about that brand? Were you positive before, more positive now? So we can get all of these things from our testing on the ad. We might do something like compare it to an ideal ad. So what would we ideally like an advertisement to do in terms of consumers' perceptions about our product, our brand, our features, our competition? What we'd like an ideal ad to do in terms of the emotional connection that the ad would do? What we want people to do in terms of beliefs formed, or the persuasiveness. So that's another approach to think about what should the ad be doing compared to ideal ad. How good is it? If we do some stuff before we roll out the campaign, we have the chance to change it, modify it, make it better, because we've done some pre-testing. So I like that idea. Who does all this work? Well, it just varies depending on how big you are and who you work with. So a full service advertising agency will do everything for you. They do the research, select the media, develop the copy, produce the artwork, coordinate the integrated marketing communication with all your marketing efforts. Yay, they cost money. A limited service or specialty agency, they're going to specialize in just one aspect of the creative process. Usually they'll provide the creative production work. Maybe they'll buy previously unpurchased media space. At an in-house agency, you might have your own people working on this stuff. They're going to provide a range of services depending on the company needs and, of course, how big the company is. So a variety of folks can produce this advertising for us. The ad ran. Congratulations. Hope it all went well for you. How about we post-test it? Measure how well it did. Evaluate the end result. So here, unlike our pre-testing, the conditions of exposure and conditions of purchase are real, not simulated. So post-testing is more accurate, less difficult, and less expensive than pre-testing. So how well did the ad actually perform out in the wild? So did the advertisement grab consumers' attention, it for real or not? So did people notice it or ignore it? Did it get our name across? Did it work as part of an integrated marketing communication campaign, as part of the whole? What were the strong spots and the weak spots in that ad campaign, including this ad? Was it cost efficient? How many of our target audience were reached per dollar invested? What was the most cost efficient way of getting the message out there? TV, radio, print, web advertising, store displays, etc. What happened when the competition recognized what we were doing and started their big campaign against us? What approach usually works best in this market in the future? What should we do more of? What should we avoid? So a little learning, a little evaluation on the feedback. All of that then was an overview of advertising. We do have courses in advertising, by the way, both in the college and outside. Sales promotion, a different element of the promotion mix. Sales promotions are short-term inducements of value that we offer to either a channel member or a consumer to arouse interest in buying a good or a service. As we see, they're offered to both end users and channel members. They can be used to achieve a variety of objectives, both for the ultimate consumer and for our channel members. How many of you guys use coupons to buy stuff at the store? Coupons? One person? A study a while ago was surprising to me. The study showed more men were more likely to use coupons, which I found puzzling, but okay, than women were for use in stores. So what are we trying to do with the coupon? We're trying to stimulate demand. Also, because the retailer knows we're running the coupon, it encourages retail support to carry our product. The disadvantage is that consumers may delay their purchases while they're monkeying around for the coupon or waiting for a coupon. Special deals. Maybe we're going to offer a two-for-one deal. Maybe we're going to offer a deal where we're going to get the razor with the shaving cream. Increase trial, retaliate against the competition's actions. It reduces consumers' risk. A two-for-one deal reduces our risk. But again, consumers may delay future purchases, or the deal may reduce the perceived product value. How can they offer two-for-one now, and then they're going to charge full price later? Premiums. Did you ever buy a product to get the premium, to get the coffee cup, to get the shirt, to get the hat? You ever do something like that? No? Yeah, I see a couple heads going, yeah. So it builds goodwill. Consumers like free or reduced price merchandise, but if the consumers only bought your product to get the premium, you probably didn't accomplish your goal. Contests. Increase consumer purchases. Build business inventory. We can encourage consumer involvement with the product. Requires creative or analytical thinking. So take a picture on your phone with this product and a friend and upload it for our contest, and the contest winner will win whatever gets involvement. Sweepstakes, encourage present customers to buy more, minimizes brand switching. I don't know if they're still doing it, but anybody remember the McDonald's like Monopoly game? And you'd collect the little things, and some of them gave you rewards. If you got three of a kind, you got a bigger reward. Obviously, to the extent the kids are interested anyhow, drives people back for the thing. So consumers buy more. They go back to McDonald's to get it. We get the customer to use the product in store more often. But if they're only coming for the sweepstakes, then sales drop off. Free samples to encourage new product trial. I was just messing around with some boxes of stuff I should have brought over. It was a plastic bag into which a Sunday newspaper would have been put, and in the plastic bag was attached a free sample of whatever the thing was. So everybody got a free sample. Low risk for the consumer, high cost for the company. Loyalty programs, buy 10 and get one free, encourages repeat purchases, helps create loyalty, can be high cost for the company. Point of purchase display, we talked about those kumquat flavored ding dongs. You walk in the store, you see the in purchase display. Wow, yeah, I meant to buy some of those. So we increase product trial, provide in store support for other promotions, provides good product visibility, but retailers have limited floor space. It's hard to get their attention. Rebates, giving people money back for buying your product. You can encourage consumers to buy, might stop a sales decline. It does stimulate demand. But it's pretty easy for the competition to copy that. It also steals sales from the future. People say, I'll buy it now while the price is down, and can reduce the perceived product value. And product placement. We can either introduce new products or demonstrate product use or just get our name out there. I think they're still doing it in, let me see if I can come up with the TV show. What's the one that shows all of a whole series of singing and dancing routines, and they have a panel up front, and they're evaluating what's going on? What is it? No? America's Got Talent. And at least for a long time, product placement, they were always drinking Coke products, if you remember that. And you see the Coke cup was always shown there. But there's lots of product placement. Positive message in a non-commercial setting. Little control over presentation of product. Probably the most famous one of these was Reese's Pieces in E.T. You guys know the movie E.T.? And they use Reese's Pieces with the alien. That was offered to M&M's. M&M's heard about the concept, and they said, a funny little alien, and no, we aren't going to do that. Reese's Pieces, I think I got the right name anyhow, candy sales went up tremendously after the movie was released with its product placement. Burger King to give crypto rewards with Robin Hood. Burger King's Royal Perks users who spend more than $5 on the chain's app, whatever day this was, will be rewarded with one coin from a pool of either 20 BTCs, 200 ETHs, or 2 million Dogecoins. A fast food chain, Burger King, plans to give away crypto as prizes to its customers in partnership with the platform Robin Hood. Starting Monday, whatever day that was, for 3 weeks, members of Burger King's Royal Perks loyalty program in the U.S. who spend more than $5 will get one of those awards. So we see a short-term inducement of value to arouse interest in making a purchase. And so there's a sales promotion out of Burger King. Here's a coupon for $1 off the fruit product. You can actually do sales promotions on social media. So here's one for Taco Bell. Get half off Taco Bell on app orders of up to $20. Just download their app and you get a special deal. Here's a sweepstakes out of McDonald's, the Lion King. Win a family vacation for four. You have a 1 in 4 chance to win something. We also can do sales promotions for folks in our channel, our channel members. So if you will buy this particular product from us, store it in your warehouse, ship it down to retailers, we'll give you a merchandise allowance for this particular product. Or if you buy more of this product, buy 100 cases, we'll give you a special discount for that, price off. Or if you're going to buy our products over the next 2-month period, we won't make you pay us right away. We'll allow you 3 months extra to pay us. Cooperative advertising, carry our product, advertise it down to the retailer, out to the consumer, and we'll help pay for that. Given the newness of this product, we know the consumers want it, but it's a little complex. We will train your sales force on how to best present this to the retailers. So you'll make more money, we'll make more money, the retailers will be happy. So these are all short-term inducements to get the trade to carry our product. Public relations, another element in our promotional mix toolkit. Public relations is a form of communication management that seeks to influence the feelings, opinions, or beliefs held by consumers, prospective customers, stockholders, suppliers, employees, and other publics about a company and its products or services. Note the bold here. Public relations is not paid for directly. You still have to create the publicity kit and send it out. It's non-personal, and usually it does not identify the sponsor. All of those business in the news and marketing news stories I bring you, I didn't write them, right? I found them on the internet. There are people out there who every day have to come up with new stories about new products and new distribution things and innovations. And so we send out our public relations kit to people so they will hopefully find it interesting enough to write about, to share, to put on the radio, etc. So we have things like news releases about our brand new thing. News conferences. Apple does a major news conference several times a year as they release their new products, and it's well attended. Public service announcements, or PSAs. I forget what this takes us to. Nothing interesting, I guess, was a public service announcement. So just getting the word out about some new idea to the public are all publicity tools. So how well have these guys done at getting their message across to you? What brand said, bet you can't eat just one? No guesses at all? You got something? No. Well, I guess they didn't work. Anybody ever hear of Lay's potato chips? Bet you can't eat just one? No. How about the Quicker Picker-Upper? What? Bounty. At least they got some action out of you, yeah? Finger licking good. KFC? Because you're worth it. This didn't seem to catch much. So, L'Oreal? Have it your way? You guys don't get out much. Burger King. Breakfast of Champions? No one eats breakfast anymore. Wheaties? No? Nothing? Okay. You know this one, Taste the Rainbow. You don't know Taste the Rainbow. I'm leaving the house. You do. Well, share it. Skittles. Jeez. Be all that you can be. U.S. Army. Think outside the bun. I got to get a new audience. Taco Bell. Mm-mm, good. Campbell's Soup. Just do it. Thank you. Nike. The happiest place on earth. Kent State University, Disneyland. And so apparently these folks have not done well resonating with your generation. I can either find a new generation to talk to or find a different set of ad slogans to grab your attention. So if you want to know more, marketing 45045, advertising and promotion takes you into more depth than we did in this high-level overview of what's going on.
Hello. What's your name? Hello, Siri. I'm Cortana.
Never mind. That's the end. All right. So, again, in spite of the fact I'm trying to get through all this stuff in an exciting way, and I still have 6 minutes, I'm going to let you go. We'll see you on Wednesday for the wrap-up. Do the course evaluations, guys. Help everybody out with extra credit.